It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley's here. Paul Thurrott's got his brand new Xbox. Finally, he can talk about it, the pros and the cons. He also will talk a little bit about Call of Duty coming up in 12 hours. Mary Jo Foley has the latest on a new Linux from Microsoft. And we'll talk about Windows 10X. Is it really edging closer? All coming up next on Windows Weekly. Windows Weekly comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Securing every access point in your company does not have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure, even when they're working remotely. Check out LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 698, recorded Wednesday, November 11th, 2020. Canadian Bacon Linux. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Bandwidth. Bandwidth understands the challenge enterprises face when migrating to direct routing for Microsoft Teams. That's why Bandwidth launched Duet for Microsoft Teams, the only complete solution for direct routing and Microsoft-certified E911 available direct from a carrier and designed to simplify your Teams migration. Request your proof of concept at bandwidth.com/WW. And by NetSuite. Get visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more with NetSuite by Oracle. Now's the time to upgrade to the world's number one cloud business system. Let NetSuite show you how they can benefit your business with a free product tour right now at netsuite.com/WW. And by Melissa. Like expired milk, 30% of your customers' data goes bad every year. That's money down the drain. Visit Melissa's developer portal for free access to data quality APIs, demos, and code samples. Freshen up your sour data today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we talk about Microsoft. I know. We talk about the latest news from Microsoft. Paul Thurrott on your left. Mary Jo Foley on your right. Wait a minute, I shouldn't even say that these days. Mary Jo Foley in red, Paul Thurrott in blue. No, that's not it either.
No.
Mary Jo.
Is Mary Jo's side of the screen getting a little bigger every week? Like, yeah. Eventually,
we are nudging
her to be in this little.
Guys, this is an enterprise podcast now. So.
this is the coup. I hadn't noticed this, but we have allotted about 25% more space to Mary Jo Foley.
This is like, excellent. I want to recount. That's all I'm saying.
I like my takeover. I like this.
Rigged. It's a rigged podcast.
You don't need a lot of room. Room for an Xbox. Come on.
No, there's plenty of room.
It just looks that S model is very small.
No, it's right
in the middle. She's in the S in the Samsung. She's right in the middle.
Sure. She's right in the S.
It looks.
Yeah, you cover that up
Xbox
so we can't
series.
See it.
Yeah, I don't want
fake
you to
news.
See it. But I'm
cover
using
the window,
that.
Leo.
Looks like you're right in the middle. Looks like right in the middle.
Okay. We are right in the middle.
So, Mary Jo Foley's with ZDNet, all about Microsoft.com. Now a Red Ventures solution. Paul Thurrott is still, unfortunately, independent at Thurrott.com.
Yep. Still slugging it out.
But I just want to say the rumors that he's about to sell for $300 to $400 million to the Wall Street Journal folks is just a rumor.
Grossly exaggerated.
Grossly exaggerated. Anyway, it's good to see you guys. How are you?
Good.
Getting better all the time.
Lisa follows you on Instagram, Paul, and she says, when can we go to whatever that restaurant, the Spotted Kilt or whatever it is you're going to?
Yes.
When can we
walking
go?
Walking cats.
She says, we gotta move to Mukunji.
The trap door.
The trap door.
Yeah,
the food looks good.
You guys got to come by.
She's looking at your Eggs Benedict. She's going, I want to go to the trap door.
The trap door makes no sense. If you drove by it, you would keep going. You'd never even look at it twice. It looks like a like a hunter's lodge from the 1950s or something. It's God knows what's going on inside there. I'll tell you what's going on inside there.
Delicious.
Really good food. Delicious. An incredible food. Beer selection.
But I have to say, I do get the impression that you eat out every day. I'm sure that's not the case.
No. Well, you go once a week.
Once a week. But it just feels like those pictures fill your Instagram all week long afterwards.
They're aspirational.
Aspirational.
Things going on here, Leo. We have fall foliage.
Oh, yeah.
We have a restaurant we go to once a week.
That's it. That's the whole story. And by the way, was watching with great interest when they said Lehigh County coming in on the votes, on the ballots. You know, you're in Lehigh.
Somebody on, I think it was Instagram, said, is this you? Is this like where you live? And I said, I think there's only one Lehigh Valley.
I love it. Paul's on TV, everybody. Come on.
Yeah. Me and my, I don't think people are there. It must be a million or more. I don't know.
Yeah. So, already we hadn't even started and people are complaining about all the Apple coverage we've been doing.
Yeah. But you know what I have to say to that?
What?
We don't deal with terrorists. We're going to talk about the M1 chip.
I think we can make a case that this is a watershed moment in desktop computing.
We can make that case.
That's not unfair.
By the way, it is. Or it will be, probably. We'll see next week. I mean, I think the big issue with what just happened is we've been waiting since June for all these answers.
Right.
And now we know what the first computers are, and that's neat. But we actually don't have any answers at all to any of the most pertinent problems.
They didn't even mention clock speed very aptly.
That's nothing. It was a masterclass in an overwhelming amount of data that amounted to nothing.
Yeah. It all sounded good.
You know what it reminded me of? Microsoft earnings where they say Azure's up 15 times of blah, blah, blah. Right. It's like, yep, 15 times of what?
Yeah.
I love the performance over what?
I love the graphs with no numbers, just lines and bars, but no numbers.
It's a graph.
Well, you know why? They used their numbers program and it doesn't have that capability.
It doesn't have numbers in it. Very good, though, article this morning in AnandTech where they, you know, it's interesting how much, because they're chip guys, they can look at the few bits and pieces, including one picture of the silk screen, and kind of deduce a lot from it. And we'll see. I'll have one in a week or two. But it does sound like that at least the people who are saying, oh, ARM, it can't possibly be performant.
That's nonsense.
That's probably not the case.
And this is, listen, we got to kind of level set here because we can talk benchmark scores, right? Which kind of don't mean anything, frankly.
And we don't have any yet. So
the important thing here is, well, the two things. It's the same thing that's important on the Windows side. It's performance and compatibility, and those both take on a bunch of different things because performance is, you know, native performance. Performance of emulated x86 apps, which is going to be most apps in the beginning.
Right.
And performance of iPad apps, which I think is a big deal for this transition. And then compatibility, obviously application compatibility, but also they never mentioned the word driver, not even once. One of the big kind of hidden problems with moving Windows to ARM is that not one of the drivers out there in the world that works on x86, on, you know, the Intel-type platform, works on ARM. And Apple hasn't address that. Now, Apple's
Make all the hardware. So,
yeah. So, they don't make all the third party hardware.
No,
so, if you're
Epson
with
hardware.
A printer or a scanner or, you know, I mean, how does that work? I mean, they haven't said.
What did they say about how apps work in emulation? Did they give any details of that at all?
No.
Nothing.
No. Although, the few things we've heard are that things like, What example do they give? Lightroom or work as they're as fast in Rosetta 2, their emulator, as they are on the old Intel platform. So, and I think that may be the case. There is going to be significant speed improvement from the M1. For instance, it has a unified memory architecture. Memory is on the die, which means
right.
I mean, that's what the gaming machines have been doing. That's what Xbox has done since the first days. And so, it makes a big difference in speed.
If you go back a couple of months, there were rumors that kind of went up and down about which products would come first. And one of the big rumors, which didn't come true exactly, was the first ARM-based Mac was going to be an old school, like the MacBook, the small one, the fanless one, that they don't make anymore. And that would indicate that this thing is like a low-end device and maybe we shouldn't expect a level.
Yeah, they avoided that, interestingly. Yeah.
They did and they didn't, because if you think about the machines they did announce, they are all the low-end versions of everything, right? So the MacBook Air is the Y series processor. Now that's an ARM device. And then the MacBook Pro 13-inch and the Mac Mini, both are examples of devices that span like a huge range of performance and capabilities. And the versions that are going to M1 are the low-end versions, right? So on the MacBook Pro, that means the two-port version for the Thunderbolt ports. And on the Mac Mini, it means it only, you know, and actually on all these machines,
they're
it only
all
goes
two-port.
Up 16 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, and 16 gigs of RAM. But
so
we just don't know in that environment what 16 gigs means.
I know.
It's
well, this
not,
is the thing.
It's not, you can't compare it.
How do you walk
it.
Away from this event not knowing things? Like this,
well, because
this
they're not going to say, well, they don't even ever give you a RAM figure for the iPhone. The fact that they RAM is amazing.
Let's go back in time for a second, because remember, they brought out the Mac guy, right, from the old ads, John Hodgman.
Which I loved.
Back in the day, when the PowerPC was a running concern and Apple was desperate to show that it was better than Intel, they would put two machines next to each other, and they would have Photoshop run some, you know, macro or whatever. And the Mac version would always come out first, always, right? And they would obviously highlight the things where your platform's better than the other platform. And at the time, I would have and did describe a lot of that stuff as chicanery. It was nonsense. You know, Intel at that time was better at integer math. PowerPC was better at, you know, different kinds of things, whatever. But they didn't even do that. They just, it was like, you know, flashy, you know, graphic, shoot down the hall, 6X. Mm-hmm. And you're like, what?
Who's the audience, though? Who is the audience for this thing supposed to be, right? Tech journalists, obviously, but who else?
Well, at this point, developers and then anybody who's really interested in Macintosh computers is concerned because we're seeing a platform shift. And so, you know, the concern I hear from a lot of people is, you don't want the first one of these. Who knows what it's going to be like? There are real concerns, legitimate concerns about compatibility with existing third-party software.
Which they never addressed.
They sort of addressed. They said Lightroom will be available this year.
They said Lightroom and then next year. The six other apps no one's ever heard of.
Mac users have heard of the ones they mentioned. Those are all the developers they showcased were all Mac's developer celebrities, like Cable Sasser from Panic. Their guys have been on the Mac platform for a long time, know. The OmniGroup people.
Those are still not volume unit sales of apps.
They didn't have Microsoft on stage.
Not mentioned once.
Yeah.
Now, and that's what I find fascinating, because it could have been a very real world example where they said, look, here's Microsoft Excel or Microsoft Word or whatever. It comes up. It's just blah, blah, blah. It works. It's just as fast or whatever percentage is fast. Mm-hmm. And this isn't even ported over. Now, here's the M1 version, and oh my God, it's amazing. Like, it goes so fast, there's not even a splash screen. Nothing. Mm.
Well, that's going to come out later. This was a 45-minute presentation.
Right.
They announced three new computers and a new processor architecture in 45 minutes. There will be a lot more information to come,
I saw some people in the Microsoft world speculating, what if they show cloud PC running on a Mac and Microsoft apps? And I'm like, you know what? They're not going to waste cloud PC on an Apple event, but at some point that demo could happen, right? Showing how on a Mac you could run virtually your Microsoft apps.
Anything. I mean, that would run on a Chromebook, so.
Yeah.
The trick to Apple's done this before. We've talked about that. I mean, they've done this process of transition. I mean, the trick is to run old software well, which is hard, and to provide developers an upgrade path so that they can make their existing apps better without a lot of work, you know?
Yeah.
And the silence from the Microsoft side to me is a little interesting because, you know, they've been busy porting or trying to port Office in particular, Edge, whatever, to this new platform.
They mentioned that at WWDC, and the Microsoft was at WWDC, so the developer conference.
Which makes their absence at this thing all the more notable, you know? They're not ready. It's not ready.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
The fantasy story is, if you're an app developer, you get a new version of Xcode, it supports these new universal apps, you check a box, probably don't even have to check the box, it's probably check for you, and you're creating a universal app now, and it will run on both Intel or Apple Silicon. And that's not how it really works, right? Because the truth is you have to then go in as problems and you have to go fix them. And there's some degree of difficulty. And we'd like to pretend it's a simple flick of a switch, but it's not. And if you make something complicated, and, you know, Adobe Lightroom is a good example of something complicated, Photoshop, and obviously Office. There's a lot more work that needs to be done.
Yeah.
And we'll see. Bring an iPad app running on the Mac, simple, comparatively speaking.
The good news is we're going to see, I mean, you know how the enthusiasts are with this stuff. We're going to see benchmarks. We're going to see all of this stuff in a week. It's coming out. It's people have ordered
really
it.
Is coming people Friday. Review who got these things for review and before then, right?
They will. Sometime early next I think a week from now we'll start seeing those reviews
come. I would hope so. And that's going to be the first time. That's going to be the I thought we were going to have this moment yesterday, but it's going to be next Tuesday, let's say. You know,
this is an advertisement. I mean, the Apple doesn't need to go crazy with specs and speeds and feeds. That's not Apple.
No, you want to drag it out too, right? Like the PR cycle, you want it to just keep going and going and going.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But you know what? It is an advertisement, and that's a good point. And but the way you advertise this is we're giving you a box that is literally identical to the previous box. We have not changed a thing. We've swapped out something inside of it. That's basically it. It's completely incompatible with the thing you're using now, but we're going to make it work. It seems to me the advertising involves better battery life, acceptable, equal, or better performance wherever it falls. Pricing, maybe they basically held the line on price. I think the Mac Mini might be a little cheaper. And then you got to talk. You have like it's isn't it really about compatibility? That isn't it talking about processor cores and neural engine. They said the phrase ML 150 times in this presentation. But
I'm not sure who that was for.
Are waiting on ML processing.
Yeah, I'm not sure who that was for because I'm not. That doesn't. It's nice that you have 8 cores devoted to machine learning, but well, I don't know how that helps me. Yeah,
right. I thought that was kind of odd. So. Apple is very good at advertising. I felt like they could have done a much better job at advertising where this thing really is. And they didn't. They basically didn't talk about it at all.
Oh. The proof will be in the pudding. I think that, these will come out and we'll see.
I want to see the battery life number. That's the main number I want to see because I believe they're going to actually have it. Right. And Microsoft doesn't have it.
Apple's pretty good about their battery estimates, in my opinion, compared to other manufacturers.
Right. So, by the way, Apple's one, just in reviewing laptops, I can say Apple is one of the few companies where they say this thing gets 12 hours of battery life or whatever the figure is. It does.
So they're claiming 20 hours for the MacBook Pro.
Except they're not. But they're not. See, they're claiming 20 hours for the MacBook Air in video playback. That's the nonsense figure that PC makers use.
Okay.
That's not battery life.
It's actually the same. It's comparable to the numbers they give out for the iPhone and the iPad. So I think they're just making that unified across the board.
Yeah.
But I do think, look, this is, clearly, the goal of this is to deliver a low power chip that can beat Intel, and that's not hard to do these days, and give you all day battery life and significant improvements in performance. And I think that's not going to be a question. Compatibility, the point you raise, is the only remaining big question. We'll see numbers soon enough.
It's the remaining question for the first gen. Remember that the other stuff that's not happening here is. God knows how they got Thunderbolt going. That's an Intel thing, but okay, fine. 16 gigs of RAM is a ceiling.
No. First of all, it's USB 4, which means...
Oh, so they called it.
Yeah, so it is Thunderbolt 3 downward compatible. And, Apple is a developer of that as well. That doesn't require Intel.
Okay. But that's just a minor point I was trying to slide by. But 16 gigs of RAM is the ceiling. No dedicated GPU, no external GPU, no more than one external display. This is a product line that today, and I know obviously they're working on more stuff, doesn't address the needs of Apple's Pro customers, right? This is all entry-level stuff. So if you're a MacBook Pro customer, typical one, if you need more RAM, if you need dedicated graphics, if you are a Photoshop or a videographer or a gamer, not that you'd be a gamer on the Mac or whatever, these machines are not for you. I mean, these machines are for college students. They're for normal users. They're just, and then tech enthusiasts who are just really curious, to see what's going on here.
I don't know if that's clear. The Ultrabook market, right? Like there are people who care about battery life and actual weight of the machine and
the Air is going to be potentially the best Ultrabook you can buy. The MacBook Pro is probably not pro in some respects, but it's comparable to the current 13-inch MacBook Pro. That's the one I ordered.
Only the entry-level version.
You can get more RAM, I guess. But
Better processors.
What better processors? It's not clear what better processors. You're saying Intel processors?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's not clear yet.
It will happen over time, right? I mean, this is just...
Getting better processors. I think it's very possible the M1, especially given that Apple's doing the operating system level and
this thing is not going to perform better than a multi-core i7. It just isn't. We can't pretend that this is just happening.
I don't know if that's true, Paul. I think you might be wrong on that.
All right. We're going to see.
We'll see. For a good reason, is that the i7's heat throttled almost always in laptops. Yeah. So it's bursting up to its top clock speed.
Well, by the way, even the MacBook Pro with the M1 has active cooling with a fan, right? I mean, they're pushing those things too. The other thing is, you know, not that MacBook motherboards are particularly big. They're not. They're actually they're small little things. But theoretically, these things require less power. Not theoretically, literally less power, thermals, fewer thermals, whatever. There should be more room in these cases, right? So, you know, sometime down the road, we're going to see like new generation form factors as well. But they're sticking with the exact same form factors, which is fine. But it seems to me like that leaves more room for battery.
Yeah, you should see the difference in the logic board from the new to the old. The new is the size of an SO DIMM. Almost everything's in that system on the chip.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can put more battery in there. They did. You know, who knows? I don't know.
All of that will be revealed in a week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think the big mistake, and we'll see, but my guess is the big mistake is to treat it like a PC and compare it apples to apples on a PC. Like, well, the clock speeds are lower, the RAM is lower, you know. I don't know if that's going to be a fair comparison. I think you have a whole new platform.
No, this is about launching Word and a browser and Photoshop and then using it and not having lag and whatever. I mean,
yeah, that's right.
Job one is just actually making that happen. That's the compatibility angle. And then job two is making it happen fast.
Let's not forget, though, Apple has its own office suite. And so I don't know how incented they are. I mean, I think they realize that you've got to make office work.
Well, Microsoft's the one who should care about that, right? They don't want to be left behind. So obviously they're working on that. But I think these apps, you know, they're kind of big and complicated.
That's the unknown. That's a big unknown, which is how hard is it to make an Intel app work on the M1?
Yeah.
That's really a big unknown. Apple keeps saying, oh, no, it's easy, easy, easy. We shall see. It may well be that it's more iOS apps get moved to Mac
but,
OS.
You know, by the way, even that process has proven more difficult to developers than Apple kind of promised, you know, at a year ago's WWDC, or maybe it was 2 years ago, whenever that was. You know, that's not a checkbox either, right? I mean, once you move a mobile app, which is touch first and all that stuff, to a desktop platform, you have to, you don't have to, but you should take into account the different types of ways that users will interface with the app, and it should maybe adapt to look more like a traditional Mac app or whatever. There's issues there too, but I mean, all we can do is speculate, and that stinks because I was hoping to come away with something definitive.
Well, this is it's faster than 98% of PC laptops.
Yes, no, with asterisks.
All right.
With
that's
this is which better ones? Than best selling PC in this category. By the way, this PC is in a category all by itself.
Yeah,
it is.
You know, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
The other thing I saw people jumping to the conclusion, okay, since Apple's going to get developers to bring their apps to ARM, that means they're also going to bring apps to Windows on ARM. I'm
very different.
That doesn't mean the same thing.
Yeah, very, very different.
At all. Yeah.
Listen, I know a lot of people who are Microsoft fans maybe are not fans of Apple, and this discussion is therefore confusing to them. But the one thing we need to sort of universally acknowledge, pardon the pun, is that Apple has some core strengths that involve the willingness of its developer base and its customer base to kind of move along with it. It allows Apple to move more aggressively than, say, Microsoft can in certain circumstances. And by the way, Apple is literally moving to the M whatever series of chips. They're not, I mean, for now where you have some Intel and some M1, they're leaving Intel behind. They're not doing, this is a sideshow like Microsoft is. They have to be confident that they can pull this off. Microsoft is clearly not confident in the ARM stuff right now because you never hear about it.
Isn't Apple keeping the Intel-based Macs though? No?
So far.
No.
They still sell them.
Transitioning away.
But you'd be
they're
nuts to buy one.
There'll be a day a couple years from now. There will be no Intel-based anything.
I think you'd be
Apple
nuts to buy one at this point. But, you know, there are people
who
will.
No, you might have, if you have those needs. It's,
I know. No, because look at, Microsoft has the ARM-based Surface Pro X, right? But most people don't buy that, right?
No, because it's unusable.
Most people still buy Intel, right?
Right. I mean, you not only get the compatibility issues, but with Qualcomm chips, you get performance issues.
Yeah, so the machine that Mary Jo just mentioned is a really good example of the problems with this kind of transition. Because if you look at the first couple of generations of Windows 10 on ARM PCs, and so these were based on the Snapdragon 835, the 850, I can't keep track of these things anymore, whatever they were, that you would have seen universally 20 to 25 hours of battery life. That's what they would have talked about. And by the way, it worked. That was true. If you stuck to the
native
stuff.
It was like 7 hours.
Well, no, but you could reach those figures. But if you look at the Microsoft Surface Pro X, where they finally have a processor or a chipset that's more tailored to the PC, all of a sudden their claim is 15. But the real world stuff is what you're saying. It's half. You know, it's right. It doesn't. This doesn't get there. So at that point, you have to kind of ask yourself, well, I mean, the primary selling point of this thing is battery life. I guess the secondary selling point is always on connectivity, although you can get that on PC, Intel PCs too. Why do I have this thing again? It's slow.
Yeah.
It doesn't work with my printer. It doesn't run 64-bit apps.
It has a special tray for your pen, Paul. That's why.
That's why. Okay.
That's why.
It does have and it has a special pen.
Right. That's it.
It's a good reason.
I got one here if anybody wants to buy it.
Yep, NVX2. Yeah, that's a great example. I think it's killer battery life. But you know what? If it stays up running for 20 hours and can't do anything, what's the point? You know?
The form factor in this and everything is very cool, but it's a old, slow Snapdragon, not designed for desktop. It's designed for mobile.
Fans.
Yeah. So it's a disappointment. I mean, I got it because I wanted to see what Windows on ARM would be like. We got a ways to go before we could see what Windows on ARM
would be
like.
We do. Yeah.
Do you think then that this gives Microsoft at least some freedom to start?
A push.
Yeah, a little nudge or maybe even just freedom. Like, look, Apple's done it. It's okay for us to try it, right?
They've been trying it for years. I mean,
it
felt like they had a lot of momentum behind it like about 2 or 3 years ago, and then it just stopped, right?
Yeah. I think, it's two companies with different purposes, different aims, different goals, whatever. It's not one company with one goal.
Right.
You know, that's a big difference. And you look, the SQ1 or the SQ, whatever the new one's called, SQ1.1 or whatever, SQ2 probably, whatever it's called, S8, whatever. I don't even, who cares? Whatever the new Microsoft processor is called.
Who cares?
These things have been, who cares, right? It doesn't matter. These things have been around or have been in the planning stages. This is something Microsoft knew years ago. That the off-the-shelf Qualcomm part that was put in smartphones mostly and also tablets was not ever going to be good enough to run PC software. So first they work with Qualcomm, and Qualcomm split. You know, Qualcomm has chips for everything now. They make special chips for, you know, watches and IoT devices and whatever. And then PCs, that's one of the things they do. And it still wasn't good enough. And so Microsoft said, well, okay, we're going to partner with you. We're going to do our own version of this. We know we're going to give up a little bit of battery life, but we're going to try to run the PC apps faster. And it's still, we're two gens in. It's not working.
I know.
It's not working.
You know, I think it's a little telling what Microsoft did right after the Apple event ended yesterday. So they put out a blog post that no one saw that was about, hey, we're doing even more partnerships with Qualcomm. And if you look at that blog post, it's all about IoT and 5G, and it's not about like laptops or desktops or servers.
Changing the part.
It's Yeah, it's AI, ML, just like Apple was talking about, right? But it's for IoT. So this is kind of, I feel like, where they're currently thinking that's going to make more sense
so
for them.
Interesting. We mentioned earlier, and I kind of, I don't know if I made fun of it or complained about it or whatever, but Apple spent a lot of time during this presentation mm-hmm. talking about ML. They kept saying yep. ML. It was the weirdest. I don't know. I still don't quite understand it. But when you think yeah. about it, if you think about Apple's phones versus, like, say, Android, although Android has gone in this direction too, one of the big conversations on the Apple side was that we're going to do on-device processing right. so that we don't have to share your data out to the cloud and there's less privacy security concerns, mm-hmm. et cetera. Yeah. Google, whoever else, everyone has sort of come on board that this is the way to go. You want the chips on the device to be good enough and to keep your data there and blah, 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 whatever. Mm-hmm. Do you think maybe this ML talk was a way to bring that type of capability to the PC space? You know, that Apple, yeah. because they've been very successful in mobile, have mm-hmm. determined that this is a selling point that, you know, and then in the future they can talk about how, you know, secure mm-hmm. and private, yeah. and whatever the Macs are or something.
So I feel like Apple is a non-player in AI compared to the big guns, right? Like, they're not even like in the top yeah. five, right? At all. So they look at what everybody's doing who's a big deal in AI, and they see, oh, all these guys are talking about ML, like all the time, ML, ML, and processing AI workloads at the edge. So, yeah, you know, we yeah. should start talking about that, right?
We have ML, right?
I feel like that's
Bob,
what they were doing.
How's our ML?
Well, I might disagree with you a little bit. They hired away Google's machine learning AI guy, John Giandrea.
Yeah.
He is now running.
What have they done lately?
Well, this is very Apple. They don't announce or preview or tip. They just do it behind the scenes.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced that Apple is not. I mean, we don't know. But I'm not convinced that they are just kind of going, hey, ML, that's cool. Let's put that in our thing.
No, I was joking.
That's a big commitment. They put
Apple has billions of
devices
out in the world.
If you look at that chip die, a huge amount of acreage is dedicated to ML.
Yeah.
There's a reason.
They have dedicated devices or chipsets for security and privacy and all that stuff too. I mean, I was joking. I mean, Apple probably actually is secretly sort of an ML or AI power of sorts.
They've made major hires in that area, lots of them.
Well, but the point of it is you don't hear about it because they don't license it to anybody.
No.
It's not out on the web
anymore
somewhere.
Than they license it
in their stuff.
This is
all,
Apple, man.
Yeah.
We keep it all to ourselves. You want to partake? You want to sip from the golden waters? You must come in and lock the door behind you.
When they announced Siri, I think it was the 4S 2011, I'm going to say off the top of my head. There was that stupid Zoe Deschanel commercial where she's like looking outside, it's raining, and she's like, Siri, is it raining?
Oh, that was so dumb.
You know? Yeah. So it flashed from 2021 or whatever, and Zoe asked the same question. The thing's going to be, it's raining, you freaking idiot. You can
Siri,
see it's raining.
If Siri is Apple's ML example, they've failed miserably.
It's like the voice.
That's right.
Terrible.
Interface to ML.
It's worse than Cortana. It's worse than Bixby. It's dopey. I have to think there's more to it than that. I mean, think Apple's long game
wake
is on.
Up one day,
yes,
and
exactly.
its Siri's actually going to be pretty great.
Yeah, Apple's long game is more about this AR world, these glasses.
They're curiously focused on AR.
That's how Apple works. You don't hear about it, and then 6 years later, oh wow, look at that.
Yeah, but you know what else is happening? And I just thought of this because Roku made an announcement about this today. But they're not alone in this capacity. They're doing a good job of spreading their smart home technology, HomeKit, everywhere.
Yeah.
And also bringing AirPlay 2 everywhere.
Yeah.
And this is like kind of gives Apple customers a way to use their stuff everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so Roku probably has, I don't know what they call it, but it's like a Miracast or Chromecast type support built in. But now they have AirPlay as well.
AirPlay 2.
And now you can control a Roku through your HomeKit. Like the home app or whatever they call it on iOS, just like you can your smart lights and your whatever smart devices you have, you know, whatever, you get the idea. But these things are not like open standards, but they're de facto standards, you know, billions of customers use this stuff. You know, so it, like third party, like Roku doesn't want to work with Apple, right? They want to beat Apple, but they have to become compatible with that stuff because it's popular with the, you know, with their customers.
Right. I think all the Wall Street analysts want to hear companies say ML right now.
Yeah. And it could be, for the stock price. Yeah. Who knows?
It's the, the Linux of 2020.
Right.
It kind of is. Year of desktop ML.
It's the year of desktop ML.
Yeah.
It is.
It's
anyway, here. Look, if you're a Windows guy and you're freaking out about the M1 stuff, all I have to say is you should be freaking out because this is, well, I mean, they're just diving into this, right?
Yeah.
This is Microsoft's got this cute little hobby. They got three guys in a corner room working on it. They're like, hey, we got another app running. You know?
Well, and also don't forget the thing that Microsoft doesn't do is both make the chips, the hardware, and the operating system. There's a benefit. Apple's doing something that no one's doing, which is making the whole stack.
Well, everyone's trying.
Well,
see, everyone's starting to try. You see Google doing that with special chipsets. You see Samsung doing this a little bit. And by the way, the Surface Pro X is Microsoft is as close as Microsoft can get. We made the hardware. We made the software.
We
and
worked with Qualcomm.
We're going to pretend we made the chip. Yeah,
right.
But that's Microsoft. You
but know, that's not that's the same part. As controlling the whole stack.
Yeah, except you're Microsoft, it does have a huge silicon manufacturing capability. Like they are making more and more chips.
So that's what they need to do. That's what.
That's what they're going to do, right?
I presume they have an ARM architecture license, and that's what they need to do. But they can't do that. By the way, you know why they can't do that? OEMs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. It's not and by OEMs. I mean, imagine Apple launched a console this week, a video game console. Wouldn't have an AMD chip in it, right?
Right.
They would have they would have an Apple Silicon chip. I mean, so Microsoft is not coming out and saying, hey, we partnered with AMD to create a custom chipset that's special to our console. They hired AMD and AMD made a AMD did it. You know, it's an AMD thing. I'm sure that obviously Microsoft's engineers are working with the AMD guys to make that happen. But Leo's right. It's not the same thing. And it's so Apple to take the Mac in this direction. And it's so Microsoft, you know, not to. It's just their history. The way they do business is so different.
Yeah.
They're just different companies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting.
We do have a lot of choice. I'm just, you know, there are advantages to the Microsoft approach.
I find it fascinating for our brand.
No, there are. There are huge advantages.
Yeah. Okay, we're done with the, you can now come back and listen.
Everybody
again.
Come back out. It's safe.
come out wherever you are. There.
Speakers.
I think some of the.
No, you know what? I don't care at all about Apple, as you guys know, but I do care about this announcement because it does impact desktop computing.
It's a revolution in desktop computing, and whether it's a success or failure, it impacts everything.
It does.
Even if you you don't care about Apple, but Microsoft is sort of trying to do the same thing. It's fascinating to compare the different approaches and the relative success of each. You know, so
agreed.
And you know what? We'll see. Is there an advantage to controlling the whole stack? Is there an advantage to designing your own chips? I tell you. One of the reasons Apple can do this is they have a huge cash, kitty. They have 1,000 chip designers. They've they've acquired companies strategically, but gradually. But over the years, they have really built up this skill set, and it's expensive.
I wonder how many Microsoft has though. I bet Microsoft has 1,000 chip designers.
They could do.
I
it.
Bet they do.
They could.
Yeah.
Do they feel like they're about to do?
But what are the 1,000 Microsoft chip designers working on? Is it mostly like data center chips and IoT chips?
Maybe.
I mean, there aren't that many
FPGAs,
working on
FPGAs. FPGAs are
they're not working on them, computers. Right. You know, like a personal.
They're not working on PC chipsets.
Look, it's really interesting. If you're interested in computing, it's a very it's a major development, and it's if you're interested in Intel, it's a major development for them.
Yes,
if you're interested in Qualcomm, it's a major development for them.
We've been dealing with this our whole lives, in the entire history of personal computing. Anyway, I mean, it was the Intel x86 versus the Motorola 68K back in the day, PowerPC versus Intel, CISC versus RISC, right? I mean, we've been, it's kind of the hardware version of Unix versus NT or Unix versus, I don't know, VMS back in the day, whatever it was. I mean, this is nothing new in a way, but it's hard not to argue or not to believe that this is the future of personal computing.
It's intriguing.
I really want to see Rosetta 2, pitted against how Microsoft does emulation. I want to see that.
Yep.
I've ordered the MacBook Pro 13.
Good. When are you supposed to get it?
Well, unfortunately, I did a BTO, which means the ones that I guess are stock ones are coming out a week from Friday. Mine is 2 weeks from Friday, so it's Thanksgiving week, which is fine because I'm taking that week off, so I'll have a week to kind of – and, one of the first things I'll do is put Office on there, Creative Cloud on there, see if they're tolerable.
Whatever.
Chrome. Well, that'll be interesting. Apple doesn't want Chrome to run well. Apple wants
put Cred on it. Put Cred on it. I want to hear about it.
You got to be careful harming your customers.
in that. Yeah, no, I agree.
And the solution is, just run Safari. It works great.
Yeah, I resist it. I still use Firefox on Macs. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Well, Firefox, because it works well on Linux, Windows, and Mac. So I just use it everywhere. It syncs all my
Microsoft
extensions.
Microsoft Edge also works well.
Try Credge on it.
I'm actually looking at Edge. I have Edge on here right on this Windows machine, and it's very nice.
Tell me that you can't stop smiling every time you look at it. It's wonderful.
I don't. It doesn't make me smile.
You know why I smile when I use it? Because apps work.
Okay.
The old Edge, it's stuff like you would go to websites or apps and you'd be like, why doesn't this work?
I have a bias toward open source software. That's why I use Firefox. And I want to make sure that open source continues. Firefox is on hanging by a thread at this point. So.
Well, Credge is open source.
No, it isn't.
Isn't it?
No, Chromium is open source, but Microsoft's not open sourcing.
Credge, didn't they?
They open sourced all their code? I doubt it.
I don't think all of it is open source.
No.
Just like a lot of browsers that are based on the Chromium engine, there's the open source Chromium engine.
We're splitting hairs here. It's open source.
Open source-ish.
Right.
It's lowercase o, lowercase s.
Yeah.
Ish.
It's open source ish. Our show today, if you are an open source developer, you probably know a little bit about bandwidth. If you're a developer of any kind, I hope you know. And I'm not talking about 100 megabits down and 20 megabits up. I'm not that kind of bandwidth. I'm talking about bandwidth, the CLEC, the carrier. I think you might be using bandwidth and not even know about it. Bandwidth, for instance, if you use Google Voice, that's on bandwidth. That's bandwidth is the carrier for that. In fact, a lot of solutions, bandwidth is a carrier. If you're interested in putting SIP into your Microsoft Teams, Bandwidth Duet is the choice. Duet for Microsoft Teams gives you software-driven SIP, dynamic E911. A lot of businesses have to have that, and Bandwidth's done a really good job with their E911. And, of course, industry-leading expertise to simplify your move. Bandwidth Duet for Teams provides accurate 911 caller information for your Teams users. It, in fact, complies with those complicated E911 regulations during your migration. So all your bases are covered. You are not suddenly out of compliance. And you know what? Even if it's not just compliance. If your employees are using Teams and they make a 911 call, you want it to work. It does. It does. It captures precise location at call time. That's critical for your organization. It leverages Duet. I'm talking about Bandwidth Duet for Microsoft Teams. Leverages dynamic location capabilities with Teams to identify the user's location at the time of the call. That's always an issue, right? They're here, they're there, they're moving around, but it doesn't matter. And beautiful. It natively routes those 911 calls across bandwidth, secure, geographically redundant, highly reliable nationwide network to get the call to where it needs to go in the case of an emergency. That solves your compliance concerns. And of course, let's not forget, it ensures employee safety. It also will simplify your direct routing migrations. If you're considering direct routing, Bandwidth Duet for Microsoft Teams gives you greater control and value by helping you decouple your telephony from Teams. This is a cloud-native carrier, but it's a carrier. It's a CLEC. That's important. You get the advantages of working directly with a cloud-native carrier, which includes fallover control. It includes call forwarding, real-time reroutes, and it works, and this is the beauty, on all the Microsoft Teams platform. With Duet for Teams, if you're looking, if you're comparing it to Microsoft's calling plans, you'll save 40%. It also, talking about compliance, you probably know about Ray Baum's Act. If you're the person in your company is responsible for this, you certainly do. That requires a dispatchable location, the street address plus additional data like floor or suite or room. It does it. That's so awesome. With Bandwidth's unlimited 933 testing capabilities, you can even verify that that location information meets your compliance requirements without obviously burdening public safety by making actual 911 calls. That 933 is super cool. You have also, and this is important, this is a company that's been around for a long time. They really know this business. You've got a partner in your migration. They're not just a provider. They will help you every step of the way, including giving you a dedicated onboarding specialist who will help you execute your plan. There's a 24/7 knock. Expert support teams will accelerate the migration and be with you every step of the way. Lots of features you're going to love. You can group your users into logical cohorts like location or department, which means you can schedule and trigger ports for these individual groups, but also seamlessly roll back if you ever have to. Bandwidth is the easiest to work with. Their white glove customer support touts a 9.8 customer satisfaction rating. They're uniquely positioned to help your enterprise migrate with less frustration while meeting all your regulatory expectations. I know I'm talking to a very specific group here, but when I'm talking and you hear these words, I think you know, this is what you need. Bandwidth Duet for Microsoft Teams. Simplify telecom migrations, solve for regulatory requirements with a single cloud-native carrier. That's Bandwidth Duet for Microsoft Teams. So many companies use them. Google uses them. Everybody uses them. You should check it out. Request a proof of concept. Go to bandwidth.com/dubdub. That way they know you heard it on Windows Weekly. Bandwidth.com/WW. Bandwidth.com/WW. I don't know if you've noticed, but I'm being very careful in how I talk, Paul and Mary Jo, because I'm wearing the Amazon Halo band, and I don't want it to think I'm angry. So I'm being very calm.
You need to stay calm at all times. Calm.
We'll see.
The feature reduces the battery life to 2 days, by the way. So
I know. Or do you have
another reason? Another reason to get agitated. Yes.
Wait, so have you been playing? Let me just check because
I stopped using it already, but I used it for quite a while. Honestly, it was pretty good.
I've just put it on this morning, so this is probably not going to give me any. Let's see. Tone.
No, I had it going for a couple of months.
My tone. 2% so far. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Do I have a picture of it? Yeah. 2% ecstatic, 6% yep. happy, 7% neutral, only 1% negative. 84% neutral.
Go to notable moments and find the bad one.
I was proud in the early afternoon. I think that was the ad I just did. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
I was irritated. Moments.
I had one phrase that sounded irritated, disgusted, or annoyed about 11:50. That was with you.
That's when you were like, yes. Yes.
It was with you.
Yep.
Oh, but I was appreciative half an hour before that, 11:20, again with you. And you know, this is all with you. I was amused earlier today.
10 minutes of each other.
Yeah. Friendly. Friendly before the show started. I was a little restrained at 9:20. Yeah. And then I was sad. I was sad at 9 a.m. Wow. So did you, in your experience, Paul, was this Halo like accurate?
Actually, honestly, it worked very well. That feature I turned off after a couple of days. I was just kind of curious about it.
Just because of the battery life hit. Yeah.
Primarily used my fitness band to track my exercise.
Right.
And I like to – the problem with the Halo band is it only tracks automatically. There's no way to start an exercise, so I can't you know, it just measures basically heart rate and,
right.
and if you're exerting yourself. So that's good. I mean, it's all good. But
I'm wearing it this moment.
Yeah,
I did the three different devices to do that: the Apple Watch, the Halo Band, and the Aura Ring. We'll see.
May the best device win.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to compare the results.
Yeah. I was particularly interested in tracking or seeing how it measured my heart rate versus the Fitbit.
Right. Right.
That kind of thing.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Is your review on Therat.com? Can I read it there?
Yeah, I did a quick write-up. I basically wrote it up. I said, look, I can't use this thing, but I still think it's interesting. And it, the other thing it does is, you know, I don't know if you've done the body map thing.
It's
kind of an embarrassing thing to do.
Yeah, because you have to pose naked in front of it.
Yeah. So, but honestly, like if you can get over that, that's probably a very good measure of your, of health. Like you're better than BMI.
It's going to say I'm fat. I know that.
Yeah. 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 You don't have to do it to know that. But I mean, I but still, I don't mean you, anyone, right?
Anyone.
I mean, I think, I think the point of it though is you do every 2 weeks, you're supposed to do it again. And if you're exercising and dieting.
Oh, see, that'd be good.
You want to see. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, seeing progress in something like that, I think would be very inspiring to people to help them keep going.
Well, know? I need, you know, I've gained my COVID 20 and I really need to.
Leo, COVID 20.
I know.
You're an amateur.
I'm an amateur. I
don't know. 20 kilos.
I don't know whether I should go back on keto or. Just maybe a mod. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I have to do something. So this
quick keto, couple of months of keto,
something.
I'm going to celebrate with keto when the pandemic ends. How does that sound?
There you go.
That's great.
Wait a minute. You consider keto celebration?
Well, I'm going to celebrate the end of the pandemic by trying to lose weight at that point. Okay. Keto.
Yeah, I mean, so you know what? You and I are clearly doing the same thing. We're like self-soothing by eating bad food.
Who isn't? Come on.
I guess we're all doing shock it.
People, but food is something soothing. That people turn to when they're stressed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also alcohol.
I've been baking. Yeah. Oh, man. I've been baking like a maniac. Yeah.
Me too. And that's a bad habit. But
it's very bad.
I made a German chocolate cake from scratch the other day. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, that's 15 of the 20, probably.
I'm going to butter.
Like pounds of butter a week. Yeah. You know?
Like you start drinking cocktails on Thursday night because it's almost weekend.
Right.
I at least have, thanks to you, Mary Jo, I got those Curious elixirs. And it's like an adult beverage. I just put seltzer in it and it's delicious. And I feel like I'm having a relaxing drink without any alcohol in it. So.
Right.
That's and they're like not very caloric. Or put some peanut butter whiskey in it. And man, that's good.
Exactly. Now you're just offsetting the butter. Right. Oh, less alcohol, more butter. Butter.
The butter's floating in the top. There's also a it's like a little boat.
On we go with the show. We were just talking about teams. Let's talk about teams.
Yeah.
What's the latest with teams?
So remember last week when I was so excited about Microsoft adding multi-work sign-in on Teams? I was like, yes. Well, no, it's not happening yet.
No.
No. Instead, what they're doing, which some people do care about, but not as nowhere near as many, they're going to be letting you add one Microsoft account for your personal stuff and one work account and switch between those. Okay. But that's not what people want. People want to have multiple work sign-ins in a single instance of Teams. And Microsoft won't say when that's coming. I'm hearing next year, like sometime in 2021 is likely. But it was a big letdown. And they went and quietly modified their roadmap update to reflect that this is what they were talking about. So at first, it looked like it was multiple work accounts. And then they said, oh, by the way, we meant MSA and a work account. So, big letdown. We need that horn, deflating horn sound.
Exactly.
Boy.
Starting next week, I think it's November 18th, and Microsoft's going to be starting to roll out in their various Teams tenants across Microsoft 365 the consumer functionality added to Teams like they already have in the mobile apps. That's coming now to desktop. I've had so many people say, but why? Like, who wants to use Teams to, like, fix family, right? That's amazing. And I'm like,
But that's that's Microsoft's goal, right? That's what they want.
They want to make that happen. Yeah. So
there you go. I'm a team of one.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you care about the consumer features, you're having a little party. And if you don't, you're just sitting around like us, twiddling thumbs.
Yeah. Waiting. Oh, well.
I know.
Well, you got our hopes up for no good reason.
I know.
Thanks, Mary Jo.
Thanks a lot.
Sorry, guys. I said on Twitter, I think I'm being a Debbie Downer about this, but it's not my fault.
No,
totally.
You gave us hope and then yanked it away.
I did. I pulled the rug. That's
classic.
Right out. It is.
It's Lucy classic. Van Pelt all over again.
Exactly. That's me.
Come on, call Charlie me. Brown. Right. Kick that team's football.
Yep. I have to throw this in here because a reader just told me about this and I was like, no, you can't be right. So AirPods don't work with Teams.
On what?
People are saying, I tried to connect my AirPods to Teams when I was going to be on a meeting and it doesn't work.
Yeah, but where did they do that? Like on an iPhone or on a Mac, a PC?
They're trying to pair, I believe, trying to pair their AirPods with their PC. Right.
It seems like that should work. Don't they just, aren't they just
nope. Microsoft, an engineer on Teams says, thank you for your feedback. We're reviewing this ask and we'll share an update so they know it doesn't work.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of weird, right?
So like, I use the Samsung Buds Plus, which are sort of like AirPods, you know, the Samsung.
Those are my
version.
Favorite
they work,
buds.
They work fine.
They work?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's an AirPods.
In fact, when you open that thing up, the Windows 10 pops up and says, hey, do you want to do a quick pair?
You want to play? You want to get on Teams? Come on. You know you do.
Come on. Let's go. Who do you want to call?
Let's go. Right. Who do you want to call? Come on. Teams time.
I just bought some Jabra Elite 75.
Oh, the new ones are supposed to be really good. Yeah.
But getting those to pair with my PC was tricky. I was surprised how hard it was.
Bluetooth sucks. It really does. Yeah.
It just seems like you should just be able to pair it, right? Like you're like Bluetooth, yes, pair. Okay, why isn't this pairing?
Well, every once in a while, though, the quick pair thing is interesting. There's a few Microsoft keyboards and mice that support this, and apparently the Samsung does. Yeah. You'll see it down in the corner of your computer, like a little thing will slide over and say, hey, do you want to connect to this? And that's when that happens, it's awesome. But that happens like 1 out of 20 times. I mean, it's not super common.
It's very intermittent, right? It's not, it doesn't always happen or not always happen. It's sometimes, right?
Please explain to me. So Apple's doing something weird with AirPods. I mean, a Bluetooth device is a Bluetooth device.
I know.
It works with normal Bluetooth devices, but not AirPods. That's just annoying.
And the user voice, you see other people saying it's not just AirPods. It's other things. Okay.
AirPods probably have, obviously they have custom software that you would get on an iPhone. So you could pair them with an Android phone, but then you wouldn't get any of that stuff.
Yeah, but that's fine. It just needs to pair. It must be. So the way Bluetooth works is you have a profile for the way the thing is. Yeah. So there's a headset profile. But there's also an audio profile. There's A2DP for stereo audio. There's aptX. So I'm wondering if maybe the AirPods doesn't have a full set of profiles. Mm-hmm. Maybe it doesn't have a headset profile, for instance.
Oh, maybe.
Seems like that's the one it should have.
Well, no, because they're – no, not really, because they're really –
No? Okay.
They're intended kind of to be music, but you can – there is a microphone and
– Right.
You can use them with the iPhone.
Work.
It's not meant for work, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
So Microsoft doesn't say. They just say.
An insane person tries to use an AirPod with a PC. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
We got to keep the, keep segregation going here. We got to, you got to know.
Right. There's a reason there's a fence in the middle,
Yeah. I wonder. I'll have to look at that. So that's interesting.
I want somebody to try it because I'm curious what, like, the showstopper is there, right? Like, what's making that not work?
Yeah. It's Bluetooth. It's Bluetooth just stinks.
Bluetooth does stink. It really does.
It's just a nightmare. And that was the whole point with Apple is we're going to do better Bluetooth. We're going to put a W1 chip in there. It's going to be better, but maybe they screwed it up.
I feel like my Bluetooth drivers get updated constantly with Windows 10 also. So I'm like, what are they updating in my Bluetooth? And is it actually fixing something or is it breaking something, right? Yeah.
You probably don't use Bluetooth for anything normally, right? I mean, day to day.
Really? Not on my PC, I don't.
On your PC, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think, not usually.
I don't connect anything to this via Bluetooth, which is probably why it works.
I bet you it doesn't have the headset profile because that's lower quality sound. And I bet you Apple said, no, we don't want you to use that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm going to look more into it because I was just so surprised. I'm like, that can't be right. And then I saw the Microsoft engineer saying, it is. It doesn't work.
Wow. And it's Apple's fault, clearly. It's something they're doing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's so strange.
I'm always game to blame Apple, so I'll say yes.
In this case, I think you'd be right.
Okay, good.
I think you'd be right.
Apple. This is a couple of years old, but it's possible it doesn't support that profile.
Yeah.
Really?
AirPods are compatible with any device that supports Bluetooth 4.0 or higher.
Why would you troubleshoot this?
I don't know. We shouldn't bother. Yeah. You've got those lovely Jabras. Those are great, right? You like them?
They're nice.
Yeah.
I do like them. I don't usually like wireless earbuds, but I was telling Paul they're doing major construction on the front facade of my building. I'm like, I need to get some wireless headset thing going on because yikes.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It really is like a couple shows ago, they were drilling. I could see the guy like on the scaffolding out the window drilling next to my window. And I'm like, yeah.
I'm like, you got a problem with that, lady? Yeah.
Exactly.
I love New York. There's nothing like it.
Don't ever change.
Awesome. Don't ever change New York.
Especially when you're like imprisoned in your apartment and you really can't even go out and there's the guys drilling out front.
Yeah, hey, Mary Jo. You don't mind if I break up the sidewalk for a while, do you?
No, they climb up the scaffolding that's like literally touching my window, and they wave to me as they go by. I'm like, hey.
No, they sit there and wait for you to turn to your computer, and then they start the jackhammer.
Exactly. Is she working now? Yes. Let's go.
Fire it up. She's working. She's putting on her headset.
Oh, God.
All right.
Rambling Geek says they work, but the poor audio quality requires A2DP.
That's what I was talking about.
There we go. Rambling Geek knows.
Talking about. Windows. Let's talk Windows. This is Windows Weekly.
It is.
So let's talk Windows. What's the latest?
Oh, yeah.
So nothing too huge on the Windows front, but a few interesting tidbits. Windows latest today was looking at the Edge download site, and they saw that there is now a placeholder for Windows 10X, which I don't know if that's intentional or a mistake. I mean, we know Microsoft's testing Windows 10X internally, but this is a public-facing download site that says download Credge for Windows 10X right there, which gives me hope. It means 10X is still happening, and it's still coming, and it must be closer than it appears in the rearview mirror, perhaps?
And to be clear, it seems like what this means is that the 10X version, because 10X is not going to run x86 apps, right? So this must be packaged differently to work on that platform somehow? Right.
So you know what? From the very beginning, I heard that the way Edge, the new Edge, was going to work on 10X was there was some kind of shimming involved, that it wasn't actually them having to make Win32 app compatible with the operating system. So there's some special way they've got Credge working on 10X already, right? So I think it was Zach Bowden who tried to go get it and say, hey, can I run it on the emulator? I guess he has the emulator. And he said, let me try to download it. And he's like, nah, it doesn't really work yet. But it's coming. It's there on the site, and they didn't take it away. I mean,
the existing emulators to the old 10X that still had x86 app compat, so it's possible. Yeah. It's a little different now. Yeah.
Right. So 10X, you know, we think it's coming in the spring of 2021, and we think it will not have Win32 support right off the bat. So it's happening. It's happening. And Cloud PC, we know from last week, we saw a leak on that's also getting closer, and it looks like Microsoft's standing up a website for that now, too. So the big grand plan seems to be coming together. on 10X. Will anyone ever get to test 10X before it goes public? Anybody outside Microsoft? I keep hearing no.
It's a big mistake. Which is like,
guys, don't do this. Don't do this. You did this with Windows.
But it's almost like, they know the feedback's going to be negative. And then they're going to have to deal with that. And now they can just release it and deal with it after the fact. It's a big mistake.
I think it's a mistake too. But hey, anyway. Other 10 things. Today there was a new dev channel build for Windows 10 that came from, again, from the Iron Branch for, like I said, for dev channel insiders. And there's basically no new features, lots of fixes, lots of known issues.
There's your phone thing.
Yeah, which isn't really part of it, right? Is it? I mean, your phone's a separate app.
No, not technically, but it was, I think it's insider versions of your phone app. So as the your phone team promised, they're going to start making the app actually useful. And the first step is letting you arbitrarily run multiple apps from your phone and not just one. So that capability is there. It's only on modern Samsung devices.
I know.
You know,
it's not even on the Duo. Not even on the Duo.
No, because they have this partnership with Samsung. So these features go there first. So basically, if you bought a Samsung, actually, it's not even this year. It doesn't work with the S20. So a Note 20, a Fold 2Z, Z Flip, those newer phones, you'll get that integration. So it will spread out. It's coming to everyone eventually.
One day.
We'll get there.
But they still have that same problem you discovered, which is if your phone is off, it doesn't work, right?
Yep, that's a hard computer science problem. They're working on that.
That is.
of course not.
So the reason you want to use your phone is so you don't have to turn your phone on,
You don't have to pick up your phone. Right. If I'm going to pick up my phone and authenticate.
Oh, you mean unlock? Unlocked, not on, just unlocked.
Right.
So if you've got your phone in the other room and you want to get multi-apps, no, you can't because the phone has like gone to sleep and you have to like wake it up.
You still can. You can do it on the phone. You can do it in the software. It's just a pain in the...
Okay, good.
Yeah. You can sign in still, but you have to use a PIN. The other thing they're working on is allowing apps to expand. So if you drag the window out, you'll be able to get like a tablet version of the app, which actually would be a really cool feature. It's another little... computer science problem. They'll get there.
Yep.
I think.
Lots of hard problems being solved, hopefully. Mm-hmm. and if you're still somebody running Windows 10 1903, your days are numbered, my friend.
Yep.
It exits support December 8th. And so Microsoft has started forcibly moving you off 1903 to 1909, which is kind of interesting.
Does that mean? Is a group of soldiers kicking your door and hold you
at gunpoint? Storm your home and grab you.
Check for updates. Do it.
Do it.
Love it.
Yeah. It's more going through, I believe, Windows update, automatic updates. When they come down to the wire and even if you've paused your updates, it says, so you're almost within the window of when this exits support. So now we are going to help you go to the next version.
We noticed you're trying to pause updates. That's cute.
Yeah. Stop.
Yeah.
we're gonna work.
If you are on a metered connection or whatever the workarounds are.
Yeah. I don't think it does it if you're on a metered connection, right?
So.
Yeah.
I mean,
they're moving you from 1903 to 1909. Wouldn't you think they'd move you to 2004?
Yeah. I would, but you know what? Obviously, the 1903 to 1909 upgrade is super fast.
Easy,
it's a cumulative update. It's, if they had gone to 2004 or 2004, you would have had to do a major feature update with a huge download. Right. Yeah. So what
are the LTS versions? I know Microsoft doesn't like to say that, but some versions are longer support than others, aren't they?
They are.
Yes. For businesses. Yeah,
Windows 10.
Oh, not for end users, just for businesses.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So it's LTSC, long-term servicing H2. Channel.
And the H2 releases.
The H2 releases are considered the...
Yeah. So 1909 is one and 20H2 is the next one.
Right. So that's why 1909.
Is that true?
I think the reason for the pushing to 1909 and not a newer version is that any newer version than that would have required a full feature update, which is a big process.
It would take a long time, right?
Yeah.
So Windows 10 1809 was an LTSC, and 1607 was, and 1507. So it's more random than like every other one.
Well, I think they extended it over time.
Did they?
Remember, because, okay. it went from, I think it became 18. Oh, wait, but it is 18 months.
Yeah.
I thought it was the last 2 years it was H2 releases. No, I don't know.
I think you're right because
faking my way through this thing for like 10 years.
This is what Ed Bott was saying when we were talking about this new version. What is it? Santa Fe of Windows. What is it? Austin. I don't know. It's something, right?
Sure.
Do you know what I'm talking about? The new UI?
Yes.
Sun Valley.
And it comes out, or it's planned for 21H2. And his he was saying, no, normally those are LTS releases. Sure. So why would you release this big change on an LTS? You would want to do it on a H1.
The theory there is next year things are going to change again.
That's not going to be LTS anymore.
Oh, also that might be an optional update.
Oh, okay.
We don't know how that's going to work.
But that does confirm this notion that H2s are the long-term service versions.
It's in my brain for a reason. I can't say that.
I know. I'm like, I should just know this off the top of my head, and I'm forgetting. Yep. Where's Taro? Taro will know. Where are you, Taro? He hasn't told us yet. Right. Anyway. Yeah. So that's that on 1909. This just bears a very fast mention. Windows holographic version 20H2. This is the version of Windows 10 inside the HoloLens. So there is a new version for this that's based on 2004. And I looked at the long list of features, and there's a lot of business features in here, like certificate manager, autopilot support, blah, blah, blah. There's auto eye position support, which I think is the only one that's kind of interesting to consumers. So it says, this will actively compute your eye positions without the users having to go through eye tracking calibration. So if that works, that's pretty cool because where they try to calibrate it when they first put the HoloLens on your head and match it up with your eyes.
It's like getting an eye exam. You know, they use the machine. There it is. You know.
Yeah.
That got better with the second HoloLens.
And it did.
It seems like now it's going to be a non-event. So that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the very last thing on Windows 10, some people are, I didn't have this problem, thank goodness, but there's a bug in Windows 10 2004 that was resulting in some people having their PC forget their username and passwords for installed apps, including things like Outlook. I never had that happen.
Oh.
Very happy. I know.
Because I've had callers on the radio show describe this weird scenario, and I said, well, that doesn't make any sense.
Oh, yep. So it's happening. They call it the password amnesia bug.
Yeah.
Yep.
Except instead of it forgot.
Exactly. So they're developing a workaround for this and a fix. Their fix is coming, which is good. I had never even heard of this bug. So I'm like, wow, this is a pretty weird, random one. There's a way you can fix this in PowerShell now. I know we have a post on ZDNet where it takes you through the steps you can use to fix it on PowerShell. But yeah, it's not you, it's them.
Wow, really interesting.
Yeah, I know, right? That's one of those ones you're like, how? What? Yep.
In the words of Richard Campbell, .NET rocks.
I once asked Richard Campbell if he could give me a .NET elevator pitch.
What was it?
It's really hard to explain.
Yeah. What is it?
It is.
It's a framework.
He said that he could.
Yeah.
That was as far as that conversation went.
That's all he's done. Okay.
It's a floor wax and a dessert topping, Leo.
Well, what is it, Paul? It's a programming framework.
So it's an application runtime environment.
By the way, the Halo said I was curious and skeptical in that last statement. So,
really,
yes,
it knew. Now I'm knowledgeable, confident.
Now I am openly mocking you.
I'm amused, friendly, and happy. Yeah. This is amazing.
I think the weirdest thing about .NET is that it was developed outside of Windows, but was originally Windows proprietary.
And right.
it just kind of didn't, it never really made a lot of sense.
And then thanks to Miguel de Acasa, it became a cross-platform solution.
A cross-platform open source platform, right, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And that allows you to do things like program in C# on the Mac or on iOS or whatever. It's cool.
There's your elevator pitch right there.
Yeah.
I know, but if you were to say that to a normal human being, like,
no, my, you know what? Oh, I mean, you say like, to a person like me, you say it's a developer platform. Yeah. That's what you say.
Yeah.
That's all you say.
And then
it's a way for developers to write apps.
And then you might pat the person on the head and say, you just don't need to know.
Don't worry about that.
Well, if you go to the .NET website, it's even more confusing. I mean, .NET is everywhere. It's like some form of cancer or something. You can run it in the cloud, you can run it on IoT devices. You can run, I mean,
it's metastasized.
Yeah, it's complicated.
Oh, man. I remember like somebody trying to explain base class libraries to me. They're like, you know, base class libraries. I'm like, no, I don't know that. Sorry.
All right. Listen, polymorphism. Can we start there?
Yeah.
It's
like, nope, actually, no.
It's hysterical.
But all that said, yesterday was a red letter day and not just for Xbox.
Why is it called a red letter day? Maybe like a green letter day.
No. Like a scarlet letter.
On your calendar, Paul, you might remember this when you were a young person. You'd have stickers and you'd have blue ink and you'd have red ink. And on those red letter days, you do it in red ink.
I know, but why? Why is that a good thing?
Because it shouts, surprise!
Because it means love.
It means love. It's red for the heart blood that you're bleeding over.
I'm not doubting the term. I'm just curious the... It's a strange term.
That's no, you're right. But there's so many in this it world. With
I know. It's one of those idioms. You're like, why do people say that anymore, right?
It's
probably
had
something
day.
To do with Vikings attacking Newfoundland or something. It's a red letter day.
You know,
it wasn't so good for the Newfoundlanders.
It always comes down to the Norsemen. It always does.
It does. Yeah. It does. But yesterday, everyone, was the day that .NET 5.0 was made generally available.
Oh.
And so... Why should you care? Because .NET 5 is like, you know, we always talk about one Windows and one this, one that. .NET 5 is the first step of one .NET, right? It was Microsoft trying to say, we have so many different .NETs. They're all over the map. They do all these different things. Some are cross-platform, some not. We want to make it one big, happy .NET family and just call it .NET and not have .NET Core and Standard and Framework and blah, 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 blah.
Blah, blah, blah.
So, yesterday was the first step of this journey. Microsoft
was supposed to be the step, by the way. That's the problem.
It was supposed to be the step. It was supposed to be like, and everything is all better now. But now it's like mostly there with .NET 5. So, I was going to say, all the things we were just talking about with Miguel. You know, the Xamarin Forms and .NET MAUI, which is a multi-platform native UI. That's not going to come till .NET 6 next November.
Yeah. But .NET 6 happens fast. I mean, the time frame to .NET 5 was, it took a while. .NET 6, I think, is 1 year away, right?
Yep. It is.
And then there'll be stuff that happens in the interim as well. Mm-hmm. I think the project
there's
going
to be servicing release.
Be put on top of .NET 5.
Yeah. So if you're a person who thinks like me, layer diagrams, right? Think about layer diagrams. Yeah. .NET on the bottom, the project reunion, the effort to unify the Windows developer platform on top, right? So they took a step towards that with .NET 5. But yeah, more to come. So yeah, all the big plan is coming together. And if you're somebody who cares about C#, you get C# 9 this week. You get F# 5. So there's lots of things to like if you're a developer in this week's announcement.
two kind of side points to this. So for normal people, you may notice when you do Windows updates, you'll see like these .NET framework updates. You know, they're pretty common, like .NET framework 4.7, SP1, blah, 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 whatever it is. .NET framework is part of Windows, so it still ships in Windows. It's supported on the Windows support lifecycle, right? So that continues. It's not like .NET framework goes away. And certain apps rely on it, and you typically won't notice that until maybe you install an app, and if you don't have the right .NET version, it will have to install it for you. You know, that kind of thing happens. But the second one, for developers, is probably one of the really cool things. if you do use .NET, one of the neat things in an app, one of the neat things in 5.0 is you can bundle that version with your app. And this creates a or solves a problem, because typically you have .NET installed on your computer and it's kind of global, but now you can bundle it with the app and it's just for your app. And so as .NET moves forward, if you don't update your app, they'll always have that version of .NET on their computer just for your app. You know, we didn't do this back in the day because that took up space. But these days it's like, eh, who cares? You know, it doesn't take up that much space anymore compared to how computers are. So, you know, you could even put it into the EXE. So you could have like this huge EXE, but the thing is it runs immediately and it's always up to date and you never have to worry about it. Like you never have to worry about downloading updates for it or anything. So it's kind of a, you know, it's a big deal. I mean, that's the why it's a 0.0 thing, but it's, yeah, you know, there's more to come. 6.0.
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to be updating .NET every year in November.
Yeah, every November.
Yep.
Let's take a break. We've got a lot of Xbox news. Paul can finally talk about that thing over his left shoulder.
Right. I know the little Android guy.
Yeah, that. Sure. That's what we want to talk about. We've done all the Mac talking we can do. Let's talk about Android now. What do you say? Our show today brought to you by NetSuite. NetSuite from Oracle gives you visibility and control over everything you're working on in your business. Financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. Everything you need all in one place instantaneously. I love it because whenever Lisa's working on this stuff, she has a 48-inch monitor. It's this big. It's arms. It's like arm's width. And then she'll be talking to people and, you know, other CFOs, CEOs, and they go, well, mine is 52 inches. And she goes, oh, well, okay. It's the funniest thing. But you know what? You don't need 15 applications open all at once. That's not a good way to work. If you're using QuickBooks and spreadsheets, databases, websites all at the same time, that's just slowing you down. If you're tired of working on multiple platforms and you want to take your business to the next level, this is a great time to upgrade to NetSuite. NetSuite gives you everything in one easy-to-understand dashboard. It's tough enough running a small business or a fast-growing medium business. You need a solution that evolves, that fits your needs, that makes it easier to do the stuff that makes a difference. And NetSuite is the world's number one cloud business system for a reason. You get cloud-based solutions. It'll streamline your mission-critical business processes. It'll reduce your IT costs. It lets you to easily scale. So your business grows, you can grow, and it'll future-proof your business with an agile business platform that evolves as your needs change. Close with confidence. When at closing time, you can accelerate the financial close, maintain compliance with accounting standards. You can report with accuracy, and of course, that's really important in finance. You've got to get everything right. You can even drill down into underlying details and understand what number is creating that number, is creating that number, what's impacting our business. It's the real-time information that makes the difference. You can see how your business is performing, what's going on with real-time metrics and role-based dashboards, and you're no longer in the dark, and you're no longer guessing. A lot of testimonials, if you go to netsuite.com/WW, Commvault said they turned to NetSuite's cloud solution because they were looking for the platform that could dramatically reduce complexity and provide much-needed agility. Apps from NetSuite partners round out the company's updated environment. SolarWinds, another example. They said, quote, we needed more than just a good accounting solution. We had to responsibly manage growth, and NetSuite provided the business application infrastructure to do exactly that. Stop paying for multiple systems, not just money, but the cognitive burden, the debt of having all of these different windows when you can do NetSuite and see it all at once. NetSuite delivers what others can't. You want to see? Let NetSuite show you. A free product tour right now, NetSuite, N-E-T-S-U-I-T-E. It's netsuite.com/WW. netsuite.com/WW. They're going to give you a free product tour. You can understand everything, all the ins and outs. And I think you'll see immediately how this can benefit you. You can still have a 48-inch monitor. That's okay, but you won't need so many windows. netsuite.com/WW. We thank them so much for supporting Windows Weekly. And thank you for supporting Windows Weekly by using that address, netsuite.com/WW. okay, it's time for Paulie Thurrott, little Paulie Thurrott, and the Xbox Challenge. Hello, well, Paulie.
There's big news this week in Xbox land. Jen Taylor, who played Cortana in the games, is going to reprise her role in the Halo TV series. Am I right?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You buried the lead again, Thurrott.
Oh, and also Microsoft released its first new console generation in 7 years. Yeah, that was that also happened. And that's actually kind of a big deal.
Sold out right away, right? I mean, there's just no, you can't find it anywhere.
That's a big problem. Yeah, it's still a big. Speaking of which, Leah, what happened with you? Did you?
I forgot to get up.
You forgot?
So I got to do the same thing at midnight tonight for the PS5.
Oh, tonight, PS5?
Yeah.
Okay.
I got to set alarms or something.
I was really hoping for better news with regards to availability, but it looks like...
Yeah, I went to Target later, and it was, we don't have any. No.
Now, there's no reason they can't deliver more over time and all that kind of stuff.
I'll get it eventually. I'm not dying.
This is also, and the PlayStation's running into this too. This is going to be mostly like what we think of as an online launch. I mean... There aren't going to be lines of people standing out in front of stores, that kind of thing, because of COVID. And, online shopping is always, I guess, easier or whatever. But, I mean, it's kind of the way the world's going. But
yeah, and that was my plan, to order online and for in-store pickup. But I've overslept. Yeah. So I'll try it again tonight. We'll see. But you're right that they did offer the $35 a month plan as well as the buy it outright plan. So
and
that
you
was
can get
great.
That at multiple retailers, too, which is
Retailers are doing
it. It's a good way to go. 2 years, $35 a month for the more expensive one, and you get Xbox Live. Xbox Game Pass Ultimate.
It's a great deal.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
So, the consoles are okay. No, they're just kidding. They're awesome. I will say, if it makes you feel any better about not getting one right away. So some of the issues that Microsoft faces is that it's a different world today, obviously. The Xbox ecosystem has expanded to include cloud gaming, and that's going to expand even more as we move forward. And so there are different ways to play games. And because of their ongoing strategy where they want you to be able to play the games you want to play anywhere, there are no new truly next-gen exclusive games that only run on Xbox Series X and S. There aren't. I mean, so...
You see, one of the reasons I wanted, I thought Bethesda, the next generation, next one, next Skyrim or whatever, I'm going to... But there's nothing at this point. That's why I'm not broken up.
And by the way, for whatever it's worth, too, the other weird thing about it, and this is a good thing or a bad thing depending on your attitude, is you sign in, you set it up, and then you use it day to day. Those interfaces are literally 100% identical,
right,
to the Xbox One. It's the same software, it's not the explosion of new that I think a lot of people expect with a new device. That said, everything you do on these consoles is faster, way faster. One of the big problems we had with the Xbox 360 and Xbox One was just the speed of the UI, and that has been solved. They literally run the user interface, the operating system on a processor core all by itself. It's dedicated just to that, and you can tell everything is just comes right up. Mm. One of my favorite features of the console is actually a feature of the controllers, which, by the way, you can use with the older consoles. It has a share button in the middle of the controller, which is really neat because in the past, unless you could speak to it, if you had Kinect, the only way to take a screenshot would be to bring up the Xbox guide. So you press the white lit up button, and then you have to hit, I think it's Y for screenshot and whatever the letter is for video recording. But now you can just hit the button. It just takes a screenshot. It's fast. It's immediate. It's really great. And you can also do a long press on it to do a recording, like a video recording. Nice. Super nice.
Nice.
The other thing, I had seen some story where someone said some journalist or somebody burned their hand on this thing. That's impossible. This thing runs cool. It is, it gets warm, but you can press your hand down it full stop. I literally a week ago Saturday played, I think, for 6 to 8 hours straight, and it never got hot. Ever. It is silent, which is amazing.
Oh, wow.
My Xbox One X sounds like a jet turbine when I play games on that.
It has a fan, but that cooling tower design, I guess.
Yeah, means it's a slow-moving, fast, big fan. It's exactly right. It's awesome. You know, and the other thing it does, that both of them do to some degree, but especially the Series X, is they make your existing game library better in some way for every single game. So some games are optimized and they're literally just better. Like they look better, they run at faster frame rates, whatever it is. But even games that aren't will benefit from the Velocity architecture where they'll load more quickly, or they'll add auto HDR effects to the game without the developer having to do anything. Like everything is better in some way moving forward to the new console. So it's neat. There's a couple of little things that are kind of going to be problematic for people. I think storage is going to be a problem. And storage is a problem because you can only run games off of the native storage system. So if you attach a USB hard drive, you can run your backward compatible games from there, like your old Xbox One games, but you can't put new games on there. And new games are really big, you know, because obviously they're 4K. So I ran out of I have 6 games on the Xbox One X. I'm out of space. I have 3 games on the Xbox One S, and I have, I think, 70 gigabytes left out of 364. So depending on the games you play, I play big games like Call of Duty. Those are big games. You could run out of space. So that's going to be an issue. And then you're going to have to manage that storage. You could get they have an expansion card, which works natively. That's great, but it's $220. I mean, so it's like, it's kind of a tough thing day one. To run out of storage that quickly, that might be a problem ongoing. I saw, by the way, that Activision, I should have had this in the notes. So Call of Duty, Black Ops, Cold War is launching tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They actually did some optimization where they were able to chip off 25 gigs of storage to make that game smaller. This is going to be a big thing for this gen. Like these games are humongous.
Yeah.
So that's going to be an issue. And I think that's most of it. It's, yeah, they're awesome. I mean, it's just
so some questions from the chat room. Have you played any original Xbox games on the new Series X? What do they look like?
OG Xbox? No, I haven't. I haven't played any 360 or OG Xbox. I should probably look into that. I mean, at this point, I don't really. I know I'm familiar with some of the.
Admit it, you just don't care.
Like it, yeah. Well, I care about the next gen stuff. So Ori is one game actually that's in the notes. That game has been optimized and that actually runs at 4K 60 frames a second on the S, which is amazing. 120 frames per second on the X. Gorgeous game. I've also been playing Call of Duty of Assassins. No, Assassin's Creed Valhalla is a game which is it's a brand new game. So it looks best on the X. It looks pretty good on the S. S and Xbox One X are probably about the same.
And did any smoke come out of your Xbox Series X at all?
No.
You saw that stupid video. God, YouTubers are annoying. Yeah.
I saw, by the way, there was one guy who I guess had been vlogging, you know, right, making videos about the Xbox Series X. And then one day his console stopped working and he put up a huge video where he complained about it. And this thing's quality control is terrible. And blah, blah, blah. And it turns out he had violated his NDA. So Microsoft turned it off.
Oh, good.
There you go. Nice.
It's not working, man.
No, it's working fine. It's you. Told you not to post those. So that was kind of interesting.
That's great. That's just desserts.
That's awesome.
I had a problem. So last weekend, I don't know if it was Friday night or Saturday morning, I wrote an article about the screenshot thing. And the console stopped responding. And I wanted to just play. You know, so I was like, well, I'll switch over to the Series S. And I kind of played on that for a while. It was fine. And then I kept going back. I'm like, why the controller doesn't respond? Like you could move the cursor around, like selection, but when you selected it, nothing would happen. I'm like, man, this is really bad. And Sunday, same thing. I worked on it again. Finally, I was like, man, I wanted to keep writing stuff about it. So I'm like, I'll install some more stuff on the S. If I'm just going to play a game, I'll just go on the One X, I guess. I mean, stuff is installing over here. You know, I couldn't figure it out. And so Monday morning, I woke up and I thought, well, I'm going to have to write Microsoft and say, look, something's wrong with this console. I don't know how to handle this. Obviously, at some point, I'm going to have to discuss this publicly. And I wrote the email and I was just about to send it. And I was like, wait a minute, I should probably tell them what I was doing at the time. So I was like, when did this happen? And I was like, oh yeah, I was customizing the controller huh, I wonder if I did it. So I connected another controller to it and it worked fine. The thing, I inadvertently switched the A button does. So it wasn't selecting stuff because I turned it off. Like it was me.
No.
So there's nothing wrong with the console. No. This is something wrong with me.
No.
Stupid. So yeah. Anyway, they're great. I mean, I there's a problem here where the X is $500 and they're hard to find, obviously, right now. That's gonna be a problem. There isn't anything that you can only run on this one console, right? So if you can't get one, the good news is you could buy brand new games like the next Call of Duty, the Assassin's Creed game, Dirt 5, or whatever it is. And those games will play and work and they'll be great on whatever console you have today. So if February comes or next June or whatever it is, maybe there's a sale, and you upgrade, those games will be better. So whenever you upgrade, there's no doubt about it, like new games, old games, whatever, in some way, they will be better on the new console. But it's a lot of money to spend to not have a truly unique experience. I think that's the one downside to this. The Xbox Series S, by comparison, is actually very interesting because it's so inexpensive. It's small. I mean, it's tiny. The thing's like this big. It will fit nicely in like a stereo cabinet. You could put it anywhere. No one would care. And I guess you could use it. It doesn't consume a lot of power compared to the X. You could run media apps on it and do Netflix and stuff like that. But here's the problem. So Xbox Series X and S have a feature called Quick Resume, which is awesome. And what that means is, it's part of the reason why storage space is so bad, by the way. You're running Call of Duty Black Ops 4 or whatever. You're playing a game. You're like, this is great. And you're like, well, I want to play something else. And so you Xbox guide, choose the other game, go into Call of Duty Modern Warfare, whatever. Playing Modern Warfare. And then you're like, I want to go back to Black Ops 4. If you're on an Xbox One, that game has to basically boot up from a fresh start, right? Because you were playing one game and now you're playing another game. But because of Quick Resume, it's basically, we'll just call it caching. It caches part of the game on the disc and it just comes right up. It says Quick Resume in the corner and the game just comes up. And like if you were playing a single player game, you will be wherever you were in the game. It doesn't even go to like a menu screen. You just keep playing. That stuff is awesome. The problem is it doesn't work for apps. So if you're I just described two games that take up like 150 gigabytes of space each on a hard drive or on the storage. You run Netflix, which is like a tiny app, and you're watching some movie or TV show, whatever it is. And then you're like, well, I want to watch Hulu now. So you switch to Hulu. Hulu boots up. You sign into your account, whatever it is. You watch a show. You're like, I want to go back to Netflix. Netflix has to start from scratch every time you run it. So does Hulu. So does every other app. So if you were in the middle of a show, Netflix you don't go back to that. Netflix boots up from scratch. You see the logo. It makes the sound. If you have users, you choose the user. You got to go through the menu, find the thing you were watching. It's like they need to add Quick Resume to apps. And then this thing becomes an interesting solution for the living room. But as of today, because it doesn't do Quick Resume, it's like it's just, I don't know. It's not great, unfortunately. So that's most of that, I guess.
Anything? Nothing else, huh?
Eric, Joe, nothing? Nothing to add?
Nothing to add?
Nothing much to add here.
Okay. Well, the other Xbox news is a lot less interesting, but if you're an Xbox Game Pass Ultimate member, you can get Disney Plus for 30 days, which I think anybody can, but whatever, that's there. There are a ton of new games coming over the next 30 days, including all of the EA Play games. And I actually, let's go through this.
This was
real
a big
quick.
Deal for people when EA announced this or when
Microsoft. So this is a bigger deal than I thought it was, by the way. So yeah. As like the EA Play, why is this not coming up? I can't bring it up. So as of Tuesday, so yesterday, sorry, I'm trying to bring up this article so I can just say this without screwing it up. As of Tuesday, EA Play is available to Xbox Game Pass Ultimate members, right, on console or, by the way, also on cloud. So I didn't know that was happening on cloud streaming, I should say, meaning on Android, right? So it's over 60 games on.
Wow.
I can't find my own article. I keep clicking on the wrong thing. Where is this damn thing? Here we go. So it's over 60 games on console. And it's some, you know, heavy hitters, obviously, FIFA, Titanfall 2, Need for Heat, blah, 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 et cetera. Great. Awesome. On Android, there's actually, what's the, I don't know how many, but some select number of those games are available for cloud streaming too. Madden NFL 20, Mass Effect Andromeda, Mirror's Edge Catalyst, Plants vs. Zombies, Garden Warfare 2, and a few others are available over your Android device too. That's really neat. And then starting next month, I think it's December 15, any games that are on the PC that are available through EA Play will be available through the Xbox app on Windows. I'm sorry, no, the EA desktop app on Windows 10 PCs too. So that's amazing. Like this is a really neat perk. Like this added 50% again more games to Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. Yeah, amazing. That's cool. And then here's one story I actually think Mary Jo might be interested in.
What?
PUBG, which was the awesome hotness way back before Fortnite was even a gleam in Tim Sweeney's eye, is still around. It still exists, right? You play it on the PC, play it on mobile, et cetera. They are moving their games to Microsoft Azure. I don't know what they were using before. I would imagine probably Amazon. But they have a partnership with Microsoft now.
Yeah, big win for the Azure cloud. It's all about partnerships.
Yes. Yep. I saw that news, and the first thing I was like, who's PUBG again? Does Microsoft own them?
Stock market up $5.53 on that story. Big boom.
I think it was an Xbox exclusive for one season or 1 year, maybe.
Really?
And it was such a dog on Xbox.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it was real slow. Yeah.
Yeah, it was super slow. So I don't know if they ever fixed that. They probably did. But the problem was, by the time they got it fixed or within a year, Fortnite happened. And then Fortnite became the biggest thing in the world.
Yep.
So this is the Burger King to Fortnite's McDonald's. If that makes sense.
Sure, that makes sense.
That makes sense.
Yeah. At least at Burger King, you can get a PS5 if you're lucky.
But you could get a Xbox if you went to Taco Bell. I think we can all agree Taco Bell better.
Uh-huh. So now we know who eats tacos and who eats burgers.
The question isn't who eats tacos, Leo. It's who doesn't eat tacos.
Yeah, that's a good question. I could use a taco right now, come to think of it. Let's take a taco out and a time out for tacos. Time out for tacos, everybody. Because it's time to talk about our sponsor. And then the back of the book is coming up next. Our show today brought to you by Melissa. Did you know, just like bad milk in your refrigerator, customer data can go bad, can go sour. Actually, this is a serious stat. Up to 30% of customer data goes bad every year. Customers move, phone numbers change, email addresses change. You don't want, if you've got customers, if you're mailing out brochures or catalogs or bills, you don't want that, you know, information to go somewhere else by accident. You don't want, like, our Twit masks that all went to 200, some of them all went to some guy in Jacksonville, Florida, because the company screwed up the address database. You don't want that. When that happened to us, we called Melissa. Melissa makes sure your data is accurate and current so you reach the right customers. Their tools have been helping businesses maintain fresh data for over 35 years. It all started with Zip and Zip Plus 4, but now you can verify addresses, emails, phone numbers, and names in real time with Melissa. And you've probably experienced this. If you're starting to enter an address, for instance, it will auto-fill in. Or you enter an address and it says, oh, you mean this? That's often Melissa. Melissa's global address verification service verifies addresses all over the world, 240-plus countries. I didn't even know there were 240 countries. All of them, I guess. And territories at the point of entry. That means only valid billing and shipping addresses are captured and used by your systems. That's really nice at point of sale when your customer or your customer service rep is entering stuff. That's a place where mistakes happen. You want to catch it right away. You can even add information, public information, to your records as your entering room. Property and mortgage data, marital status, social media handles, they just get populated automatically. Melissa has very flexible deployment options to fit the way you want to work, to suit any business size or budget. They've got flexible on-prem solutions, web service solutions. You can even use FTP. They have secure FTP processing, software as a service. Choose the best way to meet your unique business needs. They even have an API that's fantastic. That's where a lot of people build that into their customer acquisition platforms. Melissa, of course, takes your data very seriously. They undergo independent security audits to reinforce their commitment to data security, privacy, and, yes, compliance requirements. They have the utmost dedication to your data security. They implement strong controls and safeguards when processing, including, SOC2 and HIPAA compliant, GDPR compliant. That's why over 10,000 businesses trust the address experts. Holiday season's right around the corner. I bet you're doing a little extra mailing this time of year. Maybe this would be a good time to take control of your customer data. They can dedupe data, eliminate multiple Christmas cards to the same people. Trust Melissa to be your foundation for data-driven success. You're sending out catalogs for the new year. You don't want to send out more than one to the same address. Melissa can help. They also can help communities in qualifying essential workers during quarantine. If your organization qualifies, you can get 6 months of free service from Melissa. Find out by applying online, melissa.com/twit. Bottom line, no need to put up with sour customer data or sour milk. Try Melissa's. They can't help you with the milk, but they can help you with the customer data. When you try Melissa's APIs in their developer portal, you can log on, sign up, start playing in the sandbox right now. In fact, they're going to help you get started with 1,000 records cleaned for free. Just see what a great job Melissa does. Melissa, M-E-L-I-S-S-A, melissa.com/twit, melissa.com/twit. We thank you, Melissa, for supporting Windows Weekly. Thank you, Windows Weekly listener or viewer, for using that special address to let them know you saw it here. melissa.com/twit. All right, let's see here. Time for the back of the book. We're going to kick things off with Mr. Pauly Thurrott and your tip of the week, my friend.
Yeah, I have two tips this week, and instead of an app pick, I guess. The first one is with regards to Xbox Series X and S. As you might imagine, I'm writing a series of articles, kind of how-to articles about different aspects of the new consoles. So I've written up the initial setup, which, remember last week I was talking about getting the Xbox app going on mobile. That's the best way to initially set up the console, which is really neat. I wrote about the screenshot and video clip issue, or how to do that with the new controller. That's actually really cool because in both cases, you can configure what the button does when you press or long press. So for example, one of the things you could change, which I have changed on mine, is instead of long pressing to record the previous 30 seconds, you can long press to begin a recording and then long press again to stop a recording. So it can be an arbitrary length. You can configure that, how that works. Just be sure not to configure a button so it doesn't do anything anymore. Anyway, also...
Did you do that?
Yeah, that's how I screwed up my console. Anyway, I fixed it. Look, mistakes were made. I'm not trying to point fingers. It's hard to say who or what happened, but
or who did it, but somebody.
Anyone could have turned the console on. I mean, yeah. Let's face it.
Yeah.
I also read about the storage issue. That is going to be an issue. And so there are solutions to the problem. They're not great. They mostly involve you micromanaging storage. But if you have a lot of backward compatible games, I advise getting or using an existing USB 3 hard drive, right, and putting your old games on there, and then you can save the...
You filled up an 800 gig hard drive.
Yeah, with like three Call of Duty games.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then I wrote about the media functionality, but not the Blu-ray drive. And that stuff, honestly, it still bugs me. Like, Xbox Series S would be a really neat media box, all-in-one, living room solution. But without quick resume, it's like, Plus, they haven't updated the remote. I have the old gross, Xbox One.
Oh, that remote was terrible. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. If you like line of sight, it's not a bad remote. It's not good. But there are third-party remotes. That's one thing they are doing. That Microsoft always obviously has their logo program. So There is what looks like an awesome remote in Amazon, but it's sold out. So when that becomes available.
But did you not get the DVD version or the Blu-ray version? Is that why you're not?
So the Xbox One S X, sorry, the Xbox One X, the more expensive one, comes with a Blu-ray drive.
So you do have that.
Yeah, in that one. But see, I think the smaller one would actually make more sense in a living room. Like,
right.
To me, the Xbox One X is almost like the hardcore gamer version.
Right.
I'd rather have that one not have the drive, you know, honestly, and then have the smaller one have the drive. But I understand why they did what they did. Obviously, it's expensive. But,
you know, back in the day, that's why I bought my Xbox One, because I wanted a Blu-ray player, and it was the best way to do it. But I don't care anymore. I don't have any.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think we all go through that. Wouldn't it be cool if I had one thing that did everything, and then it's like, yeah, this doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not watching a lot of Blu-rays these days either, so.
No, and in fact, I have a drawer that has I think 7 or 8 Blu-rays, and honestly, I don't think I have any
right
like truly awesome Blu-rays. Like I bet, like you know, modern recent Blu-rays. These are all a few years old, so they're probably not even.
I got
that great.
Barry Lyndon on Blu-ray.
Well, I have like the Star Wars box set they did.
Yeah, but that's not 4K is coming
out. That's what I mean. Like it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, I'm like hoping, I'm crossing my fingers because I bought it, you know, they offered it, or no, it was the Lord of the Rings. They offered fairly cheaply last month on iTunes. And in the past, iTunes has upgraded when the 4K's come out. The 4K's coming out, I think, this month. And I'm crossing my fingers that the blue.
Oh, they will. They definitely.
Yeah, they'll upgrade it.
They will.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I went digital a long time ago.
Yeah, that's the truth. Yeah.
Yeah. I know it's better.
Just sad.
Just everyone, you know.
It's more convenient to watch.
I want to take the platter out of the sleeve and put it on the turntable and listen to the first 30 minutes of the album in order, you know, like God intended.
I do wish I had my old giant Laserdisc player.
Yeah. My dad had one of those. Empire Strikes Back. You would suck the disc out of it and you pull the sleeve back.
Really. Yeah.
We thought that was so impressive, but you know, when you look at the specs now, it's laughable. Like how
well they were analog. They were not digital. They were analog.
Sure.
So the analog format. Weird.
Yeah, so like Star Wars movies, you would have seen the cells around each of the animated TIE fighters and everything. Awful, it was terrible.
Awful. Tip number two.
So someone from Microsoft this week, Alex Weinert, came out with an article about multi-factor authentication. Sometimes in the consumer space, we refer to this as two-factor authentication, right? This is where you use your phone as a second factor when you're signing into an online service like your Microsoft account. So Microsoft is trying to get rid of passwords. So actually, one of the great things about a Microsoft account is you just type in your if you have it configured for MFA or 2FA, is you type in your username and hit enter, and then it says, hey, do you want to send a notification prompt to your phone? You say yes. You get a prompt on the phone. Sometimes you have to select the number, you know, make sure you have the right number. If you have it set up for, you know, facial recognition or your fingerprint or whatever it is, you'll have to do that. And then you're in. You've never typed in a password. It's really nice. And I last wrote about this. It was probably 3, even 4 years ago. I don't remember. It was a long time ago. But at the time, what I wrote was you could also do multi-factor authentication via a text message. And what I wrote at the time was this works, but it's coming out of favor. Like it's
you were smart even back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what they're saying now is don't ever do this.
Never.
So here's what I'll say to that. I think that it's smart to have it as a backup, right?
Yeah.
Like you should use an authenticator app. Is what they're saying because it's much more secure.
The problem with having it as a backup.
Well, because at some point you still need, or you could send an email to your account or something.
Yeah. Like,
there's different ways to do it.
I wouldn't use it as a backup because whatever that fallback is, that's what the bad guys will use. So if you can ever authenticate via SMS, even if it's not the primary method, you don't want to allow that.
That's a good point. Okay. Well, but that's what Microsoft's saying. Basically the new advice is do not use SMS based authentication.
Ever. Yeah. For instance, on Twitter, they use it. But what you can do is you can set up other authenticators and then turn off SMS.
Yeah.
And I would do that.
An authenticator app is best. You know, obviously in business, they have smart cards. There's all these different ways you can do it. But
YubiKey.
Using a phone is really great because
Microsoft does it. That's the best. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Well, because what you want also, you have to be signing into your phone securely. I mean, you have to kind of take all the steps.
Right.
Don't just swipe up on your phone and get into the phone. You have to have a pin and then some form of something that's more secure, fingerprint, facial recognition, whatever.
Yeah.
So they're formally kind of coming out and saying, look, we've been working to get rid of passwords. We feel like we're in a good place. If you're using this for the second factor, don't do something else. And ideally use an authenticator app like the Microsoft one. So actually, that sort of is an app pick. My app pick is the Microsoft Authenticator app.
Yeah.
You should use it.
Good thinking, Paulie.
Does the Authenticator app work with third-party apps, though?
Third-party services.
Yeah,
actually, it's funny because I don't really use it for that purpose, but yes, I think it does.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I
only use it with Microsoft stuff, but I didn't know if it worked with other things.
Yeah. I think that's the point of Authenticator apps, because Google has one as well, is that, yes, you can also use it with third-party. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Cool.
But I move between phones so much, I pretty much just put my Microsoft stuff on there now. But
And then there are some Black Friday deals you might want to take advantage of, even though it's Wednesday.
Mary Jo threw that in, trying to angle into my tips.
Yeah, well, it's a good tip.
That's
a good tip.
Microsoft already is publishing sneak peeks of some of their holiday deals, and mostly there are things like $300 off a Surface Pro bundle or $300 off a Surface Laptop 3, which are nice. There's the Kano or Kano PC, which is for education. You can get a bundle of that with webcam, mouse, headphones for $329.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different things. There's Kano coding kits, the Harry Potter coding kit, the Frozen 2 and Star Wars kits. Those are like $30. So yeah, there's a lot of different things, and they've even got some deals on Samsung phones, which is interesting. Samsung Galaxy Note 20 and S20s, the Samsung Galaxy Tab S7 and S7 Plus. So it might be worth if you're looking for some technology gifts that are not cheap for the most part. You might want to peruse what Microsoft has. They got a blog post and they've got listings in the Microsoft Store for these.
So you'd buy these on the Microsoft Store. Nice.
And you'll probably get them by February, March. You'll be fine.
Yeah, that's a good point. Hurry.
Start now. Get them now.
And there's big news.
Yeah.
And you got it as your enterprise pick of the week. Good way to sneak that in.
Yeah. So actually, there's a reason I put this as my enterprise pick. So in July this year, Peggy Johnson, who had been with Microsoft for a long time as their head of business development, left to go become the CEO of Magic Leap. I remember we talked about that and we were kind of like, that's a head scratcher. But it's been since then that Microsoft hasn't had a biz dev chief. And I was curious because when Peggy Johnson was there, she inked a lot of partnerships with Microsoft. And she also worked on a lot of the strategic acquisitions and deals and venture investments. So they've now got somebody to take her place who's going to be doing all that. I did not know this person, but I guess he is very well known in the industry. Christopher Young used to be CEO of McAfee until earlier this year, but also has done stints at Intel and VMware and RSA. He's very cybersecurity focused, which I think makes a lot of sense when you think about what Microsoft's emphasizing these days. And my guess is now that they have announced him as the new biz dev chief, reporting straight to Satya Nadella and on the senior leadership team, that we're going to see more Microsoft acquisitions possibly. There was like a ton of Microsoft acquisitions at the start of this year up through July. Peggy Johnson leaves in July. And then the only company they bought since July was who's the parent of Bethesda Software?
Microsoft.
What was their name? Zendesk? No, not Zendesk.
No, it was something with Z.
Yeah, something weird. Yeah.
I know. Whoever that was, they bought them. And that's like the only big acquisition they've done since Peggy left. So, it is the pandemic and all. Maybe that's putting a quieter period around acquisitions. But if you're somebody who has been wondering who's Microsoft going to buy next, or you have a company you wanted them to invest in, you want to know this guy. His name is Christopher Young, and he's the new biz dev chief.
I bet that would be a fun job. biz dev.
I bet it'd be a stressful job.
Well, it depends. I mean,
yeah.
Probably a lot of travel, which would be a bummer. But I feel like it'd be kind of interesting to, you know.
I know, you get the ringside seat.
Yeah, and build these portfolios and, you know, strategize. Yep. I feel like it'd be an interesting job.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. And it's got to be better than running McAfee. I'm sorry, but it just has to be.
I know. I was thinking, oh, this guy's been through a lot. Oh. He was at McAfee 2017 till now, I believe. So, yeah. Tough times over there.
Now, let's see. I think it's time for a code name.
Oh, man. You're going to go nuts on this pick, Leo. Okay.
Oh, good.
So, I don't know if this is a code name or the final name. CBL Mariner is the name.
What?
It is a Linux distribution that Microsoft built.
Okay.
It's meant for internal use. Like they're saying they're going to use it inside of Azure for running certain services and inside of some of their edge devices and edge appliance devices. I'm curious what else they're going to do with it because they put it on GitHub and have open sourced it, obviously, under an MIT license. But I asked them for more information about this today because it's out there. It's publicly, you can see that it's there. And they said, we have nothing more to share about this. So there's something going on with this.
Yeah. What is the CBL, I wonder? What is that?
I don't know. I was going to ask you that, if that is a Linux thing. Because originally I'm like, does that mean COBOL?
No, CBL, cable. I don't know.
CBL,
I've never heard of that acronym.
Hyphen Mariner. And yeah, this is something that they put on GitHub like 3 or 4 months ago, quietly. Nobody saw it. Then InfoWorld picked up on it and they're like, hey, did you see this? There's another Microsoft Linux distribution.
I'm guessing the L is Linux, but.
That's what I guess too. Yeah.
CB.
Commodore Business.
COBOL Linux. You heard it here first.
And Mariner, what's that all about?
I don't know.
Yeah.
They won't say a word more. They're just like, yeah, we're not saying anything else. That's it. I said, what products did you use it in from Microsoft? We have nothing to share. Okay.
Wow. Wow. This
so
is
very, keep your ears on this because CBL Mariner, I don't know. Like, Microsoft's doing a lot
of
stuff
saying,
around Linux.
In the chat room, maybe this is right. Common business license or something business license.
Maybe.
They might
it's
have
under an MIT license on GitHub.
There's a rumor that Microsoft is moving Azure, like Linux distributions on Azure will be able to run on Linux. Maybe that's what this is for. Right?
Yeah. Are you meaning the Hyper-V thing that came out a while ago? Yeah. So there's maybe. Actually an there is an Azure Tune Linux kernel that also is on GitHub that is something they're using to optimize performance of Hyper-V guests in Azure.
Right.
So Microsoft has developed different Linux-based operating systems like Azure Sphere, you know, that microcontroller they have that runs Linux inside, right? Hmm. So, I'm curious what this thing is and why they're keeping it quiet.
But, they still hate Linux, right? I mean, nothing changed there.
Well, yeah, I imagine the headlines, you know, Microsoft Linux is out.
No, I'm like, this is a Microsoft developed Linux distribution. That's what this is.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting. Whatever CBL is. And if anyone listening knows what that CBL Mariner thing is, we're all ears over here at Windows Weekly.
You know how to tweet her.
Yeah, you do.
You know how to tweet her. Now, let's have some. Wait a minute. Is it beer? Is it bourbon? What is it?
I know.
This is the best name.
Goose Island.
Yeah.
Every year makes a bunch of beers under the Bourbon County label, which are beers that are aged in bourbon barrels. They are fantastic if you've never had them. They have all different flavors. They have vanilla ones. They have chocolate, coffee. This year, they have one called Kentucky Fog Stout. Ooh. So I guess there is a drink. I don't know it. London Fog Tea. And they're taking a cue from that. So they're putting Earl Grey tea and black tea plus honey into this and then aging it in bourbon barrels.
Oh. I was going to say, Kentucky is not well known for fog.
No. It's for foggy minds, perhaps. But
all right. Yeah, 14.1%. Not a beer you're going to be drinking a lot of, supposedly. But I have not yet had this. I can't wait to try it because I love Earl Grey tea and I love tea. People who are checking it in on Untappd are saying it has a very licorice-like flavor. And from the reviews on Untappd so far, you see people either loving it or absolutely hating it. So
yeah, that's what licorice does to people.
It does, right?
Well, and Earl Grey. I'd love to try it, though. Earl Grey is one of those polarizing.
Earl Grey is an acquired taste also, right? Yep. But I think it sounds good. I would love to try this, and I'm hoping I can find it during the pandemic. Usually they release all these around Black Friday, all the different new Goose Island stouts, but they seem to be out already. So
nice. Goose Island Bourbon County Kentucky Fog Stout.
It's a mouthful.
Or GIBCKFS.
Yep, that's exactly right. It's way easier to say that.
Yeah, it is.
Somebody said CBL stands for Clippy Bound Linux. Could be.
I like that. That's
could
good.
Could be. Yeah.
That's what Linux Clippy is missing, based. Is Clippy. Yeah.
Clippy-based Linux. We need that. We got to have it. Ladies and gentlemen, we've come to the final, closing the waning seconds of this show, and not a moment too soon. Paul Theroux is at Theroux.com. His books, well, his book, he has a lot of books, but the one you want is The Field Guide to Windows 10. That, all the way up through 20H2, that's available at leanpub.com. You should definitely get a copy of that if you use Windows 10. Mary Jo Foley writes about Microsoft all the time at her ZDNet blog. Easy to find, allaboutmicrosoft.com. And, of course, they come together. They assemble every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That would be 1700 UTC to do this thing we call Windows Weekly. You can watch us record live. There's a live stream, audio or video, at twit.tv/live. If you're watching live, chat live, irc.twit.tv. Chat room is always very useful. Cloud-based Linux? That's an interesting idea from somebody in the chat room. Cloud-based Linux. Mm-hmm. That would make sense, wouldn't it?
That's plausible. Yeah.
That's a good guess.
Web,
I like it.
Web 9816, not his real name, came up with that.
No.
I don't think so. Could be.
Are you sure?
We named the Web 9816. Go forth.
I heard that was a really popular birth name in 1997.
where was I? Oh, yes. On-demand versions of the show available at the website, twit.tv/dubdub. You can always get it from the, you can go to YouTube. There's a whole Windows Weekly channel. But I think the best thing to really is subscribe in your favorite podcast application. That way you get it automatically. And you can decide if you want to listen to it or just throw it out.
And ring the bell.
Ring the bell. Subscribe, please. I beg of you. Hey, thanks, Paul, Mary Jo. Have a wonderful week. We'll be here next week. And I guess we'll be here Thanksgiving week as well. I won't be. I'm going to take a little time off. Not going anywhere. Not doing anything. Sure. At least I can stay in my jammies a couple extra days. So Mike will be in 2 weeks from now.
You can work on your Thanksgiving dinner.
I'm going to be working on my M1 MacBook Pro 13 and just laughing.
Yeah.
Laughing, sure. laughing. Nice. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.
Want more Twit? Well, check out Smart Tech Today. It's at twit.tv/STT. It's the show where Matthew Casanelli and I cover everything there is to know about smart tech. It's automation. It's connected devices. It's smart home. It's all those goodies and so much more. We get the news. We get the latest devices. We do reviews. Everything. You got to check it out. twit.tv/STT for Smart Tech Today.